This chapter is an interesting chapter because it really reviews a lot of the material that took place during these 40 years of the wanderings. And the summary of Israel's journeys is the title of the chapter here. And Charles Ryrie, in his study Bible, made this comment. He said, the chapter records the itinerary of the Israelites from Egypt to Jordan. Listed are 41 stages in their journey of 40 years. Because these places were campsites, not towns, most of them are unknown today. Moses himself recorded this itinerary. We see that in verse number 2, we'll read in a moment, as a reminder of God's care. Right, so verse number 1 says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel, which went forth out of the land of Egypt with their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses wrote their goings according to their journeys by the commandment of the Lord. And these are their journeys according to their goings out. Okay? So, what Ryrie said here is important for us to note here. So these places he mentions here, they're a little hard to identify. And that's why when you find maps, Bible maps, people don't have them all in the same location. Sometimes they'll put a question mark after them because they really don't know. They're just guesses. They're not sure where these things were. Even, you know, as we've looked at when we were going through the Exodus, we talked about where they might have crossed the Red Sea. Well, there's a lot of debates over that, too. Some modern scholars, they say they crossed at the some of the narrow part in some reeds up near the Egypt itself. Well, I don't buy that because you can't, you know, it's got to be deep enough to drown all these soldiers, and you know, it doesn't sound right. It's just a marsh of reeds that they crossed. So there's a lot of debates that we don't even know for sure where Mount Sinai was. There is a Mount Sinai, and if you look on your map, it'd be easier to see in color, but V-shaped trail that you see there, down at the point of the V-shaped, is where one Mount Sinai is. On the other side of the Red Sea, on to the right, is another place where they often, it's over in Midian, where they call it the Red Sea. Mount Sinai. So I don't know which one's which. It doesn't really matter, I suppose, but it gives you a little bit of an idea of where they were. So as we work our way through here, the first section here, verses 1 to 14, is from Egypt to Sinai. All right, so as you look in your map, from Egypt, number 1, down to Sinai, down at the point there at the bottom, that's the first 14 verses here. So verse number 3 says, and they departed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month, on the morrow after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. All right, now let's just stop there and look at that for a moment. They departed, and they headed down that direction that they're heading. They left on the 15th day of the month. All right, the 15th day of the month was the day after the Passover. All right, so as you think of, you know, this week right here, we're headed into the the crucifixion week, and the Passover was on the 14th. That's when they actually, in the evening of the Passover on the 14th, they killed their lamb. And they roasted the lamb. And the night, once it was dark, it was actually the 15th then. Because remember, in the Jewish thinking, the day started at sundown. Alright, so the 15th started at sundown. So they killed the lamb in the late afternoon on the 14th, and prepared it, got it ready and roasting. And then on the evening of the 15th, after dark, on the 15th, they ate the lamb. They had to eat that lamb that night. They couldn't leave any of it left over. And early in the morning on the 15th, they took off and traveled. Okay? So that gives you a little bit of an idea. And as Scott and I were discussing this on Friday, the day of the crucifixion, when was it? Well, traditionally they say Christ was crucified on Friday. And, you know, probably 99% of people believe that. But the problem is that Christ himself said that just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Well, personally, I believe 3 days and three nights means 3 days and three nights. I don't think, but then many people say, well, you know, if you had, yeah, there was a couple hours on the Friday, and so you can count those as Friday, and then you got all day Saturday, and you know, that kind of thinking. I have a hard time with that, because you really have a hard time coming up with 3 days and three nights, except just taking little bits and pieces. And that is a possibility, I suppose, but it seems more likely that it was actually 3 days and three nights. And so that would mean that Christ was probably crucified either on Thursday or even on Wednesday. All right? And right now, Wednesday night would be the Wednesday before the Easter on Sunday. So if it was in this week, it would have been like Christ would have been crucified this afternoon, and then all this night, and all the next night, and all the next night, and so you can kind of work it out. But it really doesn't matter. But it's one of those curious things that you can dig into and try to figure out. Then it says here that they left Egypt with a high hand. In your notes here, I noted that it means exalt with an exalted strength in the sight of the Egyptians. All right, so the Egyptians. I mean, the people... Yes, sir. What's your question, Peter?
High hand. He's putting his hand up with a high hand.
Oh, high hand. Peter. Oh, Peter. Okay.
Well, actually, kind of does mean the same thing, but not literally.
No, it means that they had with might, with strength. And so when they left with a high hand, the people were exalted them and said, let them go. They are mighty. They're powerful. Their God is an amazing God. And so they remember all through the plagues, that's what the Lord was saying. He says, I want them to know that I am Jehovah. I'm going to show them I am Jehovah. I'm going to show them that I'm Jehovah. And again and again and again, he said that. And then he says that he exercised those plagues on all the gods of Egypt. And many believe that the 10 plagues attacked 10 gods of the Egyptians. I believe that's probably true. They worshipped all these things.
And cats.
Nobody's silly enough to worship a cat. Anyway, so
you noticed that they left the day after Passover.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole Passover thing is just the previous day, and then they sort of shot away the very next day.
They killed.
When he sort of said, "Okay, off you go," after the last plague, which is the Passover.
So they killed the lamb that night that they ate the lamb.
It was a very short space of time between the firstborn dying and them taking off the next day.
They were still being 80.
Yes, well,
like a million people, it's going to be quite a...
Well, they would have taken off early.
Spinning their wheels to go.
They were ready. They knew that that's what they were going to be doing. God told them to pack your bags and take your unleavened bread and be gone. And the Egyptians sent them out, thrust them out, says, go, because they were all grieving. Every single house in Egypt had someone dead in it. And so they had all these dead bodies to take care of and embalm and grieve over, and they grieved for all this long periods of time and stuff. So this was a terrible time for the Egyptians. And so God said he was sending them out with a high hand. And then we see down in the next verse, verse 4, the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, for which the Lord had smitten among them upon their gods. Also, the Lord executed judgments, so all these gods. And then verse 4, or 5, I mean, the children of Israel removed from Ramses and pitched in Succoth, and they departed from Succoth, and they pitched in Elam, and they which is... in the edge of the wilderness, and they removed from Elam, Etham, and turned again unto Pihahiroth, and which is before Baal Zephon, and they pitched before Migdal. I should have Peter read. Can you read it, Peter? So these are the places. Now Moses mentioned Mara. And that was a place where there was bitter water. And he mentioned, we'll get to that in a moment here. My notes are a little ahead of my reading. All right, verse number 8. And they departed from Pihahiroth and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness and went 3 days' journey into the wilderness of Etham and pitched at Marah. And they removed from Marah and came to Elim. And in Elim there were 12 fountains of water and 70 palm trees. How much is a score?
20.
Okay, so 70 would be 60. Okay, so 60 palm trees.
70.
And 10. All right, 70. Yep, 60 plus 10. Okay, and they pitched there. All right, now, in our notes I mentioned here that he makes notation of Marah, where the bitter water was, and Elim, the place where there was much water. But it's interesting that Moses doesn't even mention crossing the Red Sea. All right, it says that they passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness. So maybe that's a reference to it, but it doesn't call it the Red Sea. So the account that he's given us here is more of an account of God's blessings and God's protection and God's care than it is really a detailed account that he's given us here. All right, so down in verse number, we'll keep reading down through until we get to verse 15. All right, so and then verse 10, they removed to Elim and encamped at the Red Sea, and they removed from the Red Sea and encamped in the wilderness of Sin, and it's just interesting they call it a wilderness of sin. It doesn't have anything to do with transgressions. It's just a name. I don't know why. And they took their journey out of the wilderness of Sin and encamped in Dophka, and they departed from Dophka and encamped in Alush, and they removed from Alush and encamped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink, and they departed from Rephidim and pitched in the wilderness of Sinai. All right, now, when we get down to here, he says they pitched in the wilderness of Sinai. And then verse 16, they removed from the desert of Sinai and pitched in Kirjath Hathaphah. All right, now, that's all he says about Sinai. Yet they spent a long time there at Sinai, and that's where Moses got the Ten Commandments. That's where he went up on the mountain and talked to God. So there was a lot of time spent there on Mount Sinai, and yet it's a passing comment as they travel through there. Because he's focusing on their travels and God's protection, not necessarily on all the details. And then in verses 18 to 36, back in our notes, it says, as Ryrie pointed out, most of the locations are nowhere else in Scripture. However, there are a few exceptions. We've already noted Marah and Elim. Both of those are mentioned elsewhere. Then Ezron Geber is mentioned in verse number 35, is in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 8. And it's a place where they turned and passed by the wilderness of Moab, and it is also said to be a seaport. And you look on your map here, and you'll see it's number 11 on the map. So once you go down to the bottom, and you start going back up the side here, when you get to the top of that body of water there, number 11, you can't see it real well, but that's Ezron Geber. All right? So that's where we're headed in our reading here. So we read on, verse number 16. And they removed from the desert of Sinai, I've read that part, in verse 17. And they departed from Kibroth Havatha and encamped in Hazeroth, and they departed from Hazeroth and pitched in. Why am I reading all these? Okay, so they pitched in all these places, all right? So you can read down through them and stretch your imagination. So all of these places, and like it's already been mentioned, most of these places, they don't have a clue where they are because they were just campsites. And so they are working their way down through there all the way to 36. And they moved from Ezron Geber and pitched in the wilderness of Zin, which is Kadesh. All right, so they left here. If you look on your map here, you see, follow the little arrowed line. It goes up to the left again, up to number 13. Let me see, is it 12? 12, I guess it is. Can't see it on mine very well either. Number 12 there. Kadesh Barnea. All right, so they went up to Kadesh. Now, at Kadesh, some things happened there at Kadesh we need to make note of. All right, in our notes here, Miriam died at Kadesh. All right, we saw that in Numbers chapter 20, verse number 1. And that's the number 12 on your map here. It is also at Kadesh that the Edomites refused to allow Israel to pass through the country. All right, And then Moses then mentions the death of Aaron, the brother on Mount Hor, in verse 38. That's Mount Hor is near 13. So it's as you follow that loop around, and it goes back down to Ezra and Geber, and then back up, they encircle Mount Hor. And Mount Hor was part of Edom. And so they're going around the Edomites, because the Edomites would not let them go across. It would have been a short trip across there, and they had to go all the way back down there and all the way back around the other side, because the Edomites wouldn't let them go through there, and they threatened to fight with them if they did. So they traveled all that way around there. Quite a challenging change of course here for them to do that.
It looks like they go north up to Kadesh and go, ooh, Philistines, then...
Yeah. Well, they did. They ran into some problems up in there, and they came back down to Ezra and Geber.
It's
sort of
Gaza, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
They must have had also like some type of maps in those days, because or did they just name the places as they go? You know.
Well, a lot of these campsites, like I said, they were just campsites. They probably called them whatever they wanted, or maybe there was local people in the area that had called them by those names, and they met up with some of the local people. It's hard to say. Some of the places, like I said, some of the places are mentioned elsewhere in Scripture. Most of them are not mentioned again. Garrett?
Do you think because they were like considered slaves in Egypt, they didn't technically leave Egypt? Like, then, you know, they couldn't just make a trip to some town because they're a slave. And that's kind of a weird question. Like, normally we think of a slave as just there's one master and maybe one or a few dozen slaves, but we're talking about a lot of people here. So were people free to come and go? And
when? During their slavery?
Yeah, back.
Oh, no.
Back in Egypt.
No, I don't imagine.
Well, I only asked that because I thought maybe if they traveled, they knew some areas.
That's a possibility. Yeah, that is a possibility that as a slave they were traveling and carrying things. And there was news that would have traveled too. I mean, they would have met caravans and travelers that would come and they, you know, they were talking and they'd get information. But I don't imagine as slaves, unless they were a privileged slave, that they would have been out of the area. They were busy working in the brick kiln, making bricks. So, good questions.
Joseph was a slave, wasn't he?
Sorry?
Joseph was a slave.
Yes.
And yet he grows to be second in Egypt.
Well, he was a unique situation. The slavery hadn't technically started yet. The slavery in Egypt with Israel hadn't started until after Joseph's brothers all got there, because then eventually they all became slaves. So Joseph was a slave because his brothers sold him there, but not because the nation was enslaved.
Moses, I guess, traveled around a bit.
Yes, but Moses was not ever one of the slaves. He ran away.
Maybe he was. Also because he was probably educated, maybe he actually knew the land.
Well, it is possible during those 40 years that he was at home and learning, he may have traveled some and known some about that too. That is a possibility. But then once he fled to Midian, spent another 40 years in Midian, a lot had changed in that time. Okay.
Slavery is a strange thing. You can be a slave because you're a spoiler of war, or you can be a slave because you sell yourself into slavery. If you get poor enough, you can go to a master and say, you know, here's my ear, put a nail through it, and I'll be your slave, which is not dissimilar to employment when you think about it.
Yeah, there's definitely different kinds of slavery, but in Israel, now other nations probably didn't hold to this, but in Israel, the slaves they got from spoils of war, they probably didn't treat them very nicely. They did not have to treat them nicely.
Less than human.
Yeah, they could. They speak of the Israelite slaves could not be treated with rigor. Now, rigor would be harsh treatment. But nothing was said about the ones they get from slavery, from spoils of war. And they took thousands of those when they capture a city. I mean, that was one of the dread things. Can you imagine? I mean, knowing that your city's being besieged by another city, and we got to win this war, because if we lose this battle, we're done. We're going to end up the rest of our lives either dead or slaves. And they probably preferred to be dead rather than slaves, because to be a slave was not a nice life. And so Yeah, it was difficult. Yes, sir.
I think what's very interesting that I think is always missed with the context of slavery in the Old Testament is that because God actually clarifies the Levitical laws. I can't even remember the exact verse, but there's a verse where he talks about if you steal a man from another country, like a citizen of another country, or like there is a passage that talks about it. Like I'm not talking about in the context of war. It's like stealing somebody from a problem and taking them as a slave. That person who does it was to be put to death. So the kind of slavery, for example, you had in America, like black slavery, and they tried to justify that in the Bible. If you actually go back in history, it's kind of wrong because that's not what God was talking about. You know, people living in a foreign country and colonists coming and just taking them is actually a direct violation of what God said. That's not the slavery in the Bible.
Well, if you find that, you let me know because I don't know that I've heard that.
But I'm saying like I said, that's what in America they try to justify.
No, but what I'm saying is what you said.
Yeah.
If you can find that, yeah. I mean, you don't have to look for it now, but if you find it sometime, let me know, because I don't recall reading that. But I'm not saying you're wrong. Yeah. We'll just see what you find.
Philemon was a slave, wasn't he?
Yes. No, Philemon wasn't. Onesimus was.
Oh, sorry, Onesimus was.
Yes.
You're right. Well, but I suspect he was a voluntary slave. If you're a slave as a spoiled of war, there'd be nothing wrong with running away, because you just run back where you came from. But if you're a voluntary slave, you actually entered into a contract with your master. And if you run away, you're actually breaking your contract. But if you were taken slave by Indonesia and you found your way back to Australia, no one's going to say, hey, get back to Indonesia where you came from.
There's a lot of things we don't understand.
What do you mean by contract? Because a lot of times, if people were in debt and they couldn't pay the debt, sometimes they'd have to, either their children were going to slavery or someone would, purely by law, like, you can't pay your debt, you're going to have to pay for it somehow.
But then again, in the first century and even in Colossae, where that was, a lot of those people would have been, there was a lot of war, a lot of spoils of war. So who knows? You know, it's only guesses as to what that case might have been. All right, back to our text. Number 38, verse number 38, and Aaron the priest went into the Mount Hor at the commandment of the Lord, and he died there in the 40th year after the children of Israel came out from the land of Egypt in the first day of the fifth month. And Aaron was 123 years old when he died in Mount Hor. And the king Ered of the Canaanites, which dwelt in the south of the land of Canaan, heard of the coming of the children of Israel. And they departed from the Mount Hor and pitched in Zalmana. And they departed from Zalmana and pitched in Punan, and they departed from Punan and pitched in Oboth, and they departed from Oboth, and so on and so on. And they got until they got to Moab. All right, now, when, you know, that'd be a weird thing to have God tell you, all right, you need to go climb this mountain, and you're going to die. You know, death is one of those weird things. You know, I mean, we can anticipate it and see it coming in some people, other people just die suddenly. But here God just tells him, all right, I want you to go up on this mountain, and while you're up there, you're going to die. And that would be a freaky thing, knowing you're climbing this mountain, and this is the end. I'm not going to come down.
Yeah. 123.
Yes. Now, what does that tell us? All right, where did he fall in the pecking order of the family?
He was a younger brother.
What's that?
Older brother.
3 years older than Moses.
Than Miriam. No.
Miriam was older yet.
No, sorry, I misunderstood the question.
So I said, where did he come in the pecking order? All right. What I mean by that is, who was older? All right, so Moses was the youngest. So it was Miriam, and then Aaron, and then Moses. Okay? So it just helps to kind of put things together here. Down in verse number 50, and the Lord spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. All right, so now they've moved up. They've gone around Moab, or actually they went through Moab, around Edom, through Moab, and they got up to the plains of Jericho at the top of your map in the top right corner. And they're on the plains of Jericho on the opposite, plains of Jordan on the opposite side of the river. They're on the east of Jordan River, and they're looking across, and they can see that. All right, so then verse 51, speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when ye pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then ye shall drive out, and this is a very important verse, it needs to be highlighted in your book. Ye shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their pictures, and destroy all their molten images, and quite pluck down all of their high places. All right, now, let's just talk about that for a moment. So he told them they were to destroy all these things. What's he talking about here? They destroyed their pictures. What would that be?
Vessels, I think. One day?
No, that's a different picture. It would have had to do with idolatry. All this was dealing with idolatry. All right, so you got the pictures and the images and their high places. The high places were the high hills where they went up to worship. So if we find anybody finds the actual definition of the pictures, that would be interesting to see here.
Well, I kind of thought it was like a picture or an image of an idol, like some statue. They just use the word picture, but it's
one verse.
It's verse number 52. Okay, so Gary, did you look it up in the Bible program?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so if you find it there, you can let us know. But I would assume that it is some sort of an actual picture that they were using for worship.
And then just one of the other translations, they said they are to drive out all the inhabitants of the land and destroy all their idols and their molten images.
Yes, it does include that, but this picture is another one. Gary,
so John. The verse I was talking about earlier is Exodus 21:16. And he that stealeth a man and selleth him, if he be found in his hand, shall surely be put to death.
Yes, but you're assuming the man is not a Jew.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just in the context.
No, in the context there, it means if you stole another one of your own people, and yeah, you would have been put to death. So that, but that didn't apply, I don't think, it didn't apply to the pagans around them, as far as I know. Okay? Yes, sir.
Verse 40, why does it mention that King Arad the Canaanite heard the coming of the children of Israel? It's in amongst all the different places they went, and suddenly it just sort of says the king of Canaan heard of them.
Okay, so the Canaan, remember, is the land of Israel proper.
Yeah.
All right, so they heard they're coming. I mean, and that alarmed everybody. And so the alarms went off. The Israelites are coming. And so.
But there's sort of no, so what after that? Is there just, you think they're saying, you heard about it and something. They just sort of, then it continues on with, and then they went down there. Maybe that's to do with what I said about Odo and Philistine.
Well, I think what.
The south of Canaan.
They left Mahor and they traveled on. So it could be that the Canaanites were plotting even an attack. And so they moved out of their camp where they're at, because it continues from there on. And it says, and they heard the children of Israel, and then 41, and they departed from thence from Mount Hor, and then they carried on. So it almost sounds like they were plotting against them, so they took off. But they get up to Moab, and Moses then tells them, you know, you destroy all these things. Garrett, yes, sir. You find it?
When I click on that, when it uses the same word pictures in another verse, is one of Proverbs, 25:11 says a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. So it makes me think maybe it's not necessarily talking about an actual picture or something.
Okay.
Maybe in the context of gold and silver.
I'll tell you in a second. All right, the word means a showpiece, a figure, an image, an imagination, an idol, or an image or a picture. It's a carving.
That's a drawing, basically.
So it's a drawing or a carving. Probably the carving ideas would be the idea of it, because even like in Papua New Guinea, there was a lot of carvings that the people had that were demonic, and they worshipped them.
Like the Orthodox Russians, and that have the icons, which
is
literally just pictures.
Yep. So it could be either one. All right. So some sort of a picture that they were looking at, they were worshiping, and so God tells them, destroy all the pictures, destroy all the molten images. And by molten, what's that mean?
Cast.
Okay, they were cast. They were melted and shaped into it. And then quite plucked down all their high places. Now remember, the high places were the places where they worshipped up on the high hills. And he was very clear about this, but unfortunately the people didn't obey very well. And ye shall dispose of all the inhabitants of the land and dwell therein, and for I have given you the land to possess it. All right, so he says, and then you divide it by your families. Verse number 55, but if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I shall do unto you as I thought to do unto them.
And it did.
And it did. It's exactly what happened. You can take these two verses right here and turn and start reading in the book of Judges, and you just cry your eyes out and think, why didn't they listen? Because they didn't. They did exactly what God told them not to do, and God, the whole book of Judges is all about all the pricks in their eyes and the thorns in their sides, because God just caused the enemies to come in and give them a terrible hard time. Yeah. But you know, we can look at that, and yet God looks down at us and says, told you so. Told you so. You got to do right. Garrett?
It's interesting how even knowing all the damage it's going to cause, God still gives them the choice. So yep. He doesn't intervene and burn everybody. Because yep. He lets them make their mistake. Is that okay? I told you so.
But see, the same thing is true with us. God tells us clearly in the scriptures, this is right, this is wrong, don't do this, don't do that, don't think this, don't go there, don't be friends with these people. And if we don't obey, then we suffer the consequences for it. And so he tells us very clearly what's right, what's wrong. And you know, it's easy for us to look back at the children of Israel and say, you bunch of fools, why'd you do it that way? Why didn't you do it right? And then you look at your own life and say, yeah, why don't I do it right? All right? And we need to remember that. These are reminders for us to learn from history. All right?
And the,
yeah.
Well, that's the Philistines that they didn't drive out.
Yep. It is. And so he tells them to quite pluck down or literally exterminate or annihilate the enemy, all these places, these high places. They were supposed to wipe them up, but they didn't do it. They went up there and started worshiping themselves. And then they were to conquer and divide the land, and God would bless them when they did that. Now, some principles for us today. Though people have had sinned when they refused to trust God and entered into 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, and God had tenderly and patiently guided them through those 40 years of the wilderness until all the former generation would die out. Our sin has consequences, and God is always tender, forgiving, and loving. All right, now that's a good thing for us to remember. There are consequences, very severe consequences when we do wrong. And, you know, we do wrong. And when we do, we got a choice. We can either confess our sin and get it right and forsake it, as Proverbs 20:13 says, or we can just, you know, hang on until God chastens us. And He will. He tells us there are consequences, and we'll suffer for it. And many, many people today are grieving, going through tormenting times in life because they made wrong choices and didn't listen to God. And yet, all through that, God is tender and forgiving if we'll come back. And so it was with the people of Israel. God was forgiving. If they came back to God, God forgave them. You read the book of Judges, they would get away from God, worship idols, do everything wicked like God told them not to do, and then they'd cry out to God. God would send them a reliever, and He'd come and help them. The judge would deliver them, and they'd get back right with God for a few years until the judge died, and then right back into it again. And so God gave them to us for our learning so that we can learn from that. Now, God firmly commanded them to destroy all the filthy things and the filthy people of the land of Canaan. And God doesn't tell us to go around killing people that are not godly. We'd have trouble if we did. But God does tell us to keep away from it and flee the temptation and sins and the ungodly friends. And Ungodly friends are destroying so many people, especially our young people. You know, they get around ungodly people at the universities and places like that, and it just is destroying their lives. And it's tragic. So we need to be very careful in our own hearts to guard ourselves and protect ourselves.